you a high performer, obsessed with growth, and looking for an edge? Welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance. Together, we'll discover underground secrets to unlocking the full potential of your mind, body, and spirit. We'll learn from some of the world's leading minds, from ancient wisdom to cutting-edge tools and everything in between. This is your host, Nick Urban. Enjoy the episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance with your host, Nick Urban. Today, we're talking about all things kava. And if you haven't tried the brand True Kava specifically, you probably haven't had the real thing. For that reason, quality kava is sometimes called the sober psychedelic, but it's much more than that. Where alcohol dissociates and numbs, kava does the opposite. It facilitates empathy and regenerates the brain, body, and nervous system. So I invited one of the world's foremost kava experts onto the show. Cameron George is a researcher, writer, entrepreneur, and the founder of True Kava, a company that is striving to set the industry standard for quality, safety, and education around kava. Since discovering the amazing effects of traditional kava during his own chronic illness, Cameron spent years investigating kava and has collaborated with many of the most prominent experts in the world within the fields of kava research and historical kava use. One of the fun facts that stuck with me from this interview was on the islands where kava is traditionally used, kava bars outnumber traditional alcohol bars by 20 to 1. And in a few minutes, you'll know exactly why. If this sounds like something you want to try, Cameron and the True Kava team set up an exclusive Mind Body Peak Performance listener discount. Just use the code URBAN, URBAN, to save on your order. Now, ladies and gentlemen, buckle up and enjoy this conversation with Cameron George. Today, we're joined by Cameron George. Cameron, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Nick. Great to be here, man.
Yeah. Last time I saw you was a couple weeks ago at a conference called Paleo FX. But tell me about what you've done so far today for your health and performance.
So yeah, I've got, you know, different sort of myriad of different practices that I like integrate and cycle, you know, so things are constantly ever changing because I'm a huge believer in principles like diet variation and really just like cycling almost everything that I do. There are some principles that are sort of unanimous throughout my days, months, weeks, and year. But you know, generally I cycle a lot of things, any compounds I'm putting in my body and different things like that. And so it varies. But like, so today, for example, I'm in a period right now where I'm intermittent fasting, which is something that I do fairly regularly. I do probably that's you know, one strategy that I use pretty often, the majority of the time. And then I cycle off to kind of refeed to you know, to send the body certain signals at certain times to remind it that it's not starving, to optimize metabolism, you know, different things. But so I start off, you know, with intermittent fasting. Of course, I've got, you know, sort of like a superfood, you know, mix, you know, that I use that's got a bunch of different sort of clinical grade, like formulas in it, you know, mitochondrial support stuff and different things that I had, you know, for kind of like my first meal, which wasn't until like 1:30, 2 o'clock probably. Let's see. I've got, you know, a daily meditation practice that I do. I spent, you know, some time walking a little bit earlier. I usually try to, you know, move throughout the day as much as possible. If I'm on calls, I you know, try to integrate as much movement as I can when I can. If I'm doing like an interview, it happens to be at my home because of the circumstances today, but you know, usually be at the studio. If I'm there, then I can't necessarily do that, but I've moved quite a bit today. I've been out. I got some sun while I was working as well too. I try to stay, you know, sort of connected to, you know, the elements as much as possible, you know, making sure that I can get sun, that I can get grounding outside with my feet on the ground and, you know, a bunch of that stuff. So that's basically where I'm at today. I haven't even had a full meal yet. So the intermittent fast went into my, you know, sort of superfood shake that I do, you know, and then here we are.
I love that. I love the concept of pulsing, of not doing one thing indefinitely, but treating life in cycles, because the body responds phenomenally to that. And a lot of the ancient medical systems also espouse the importance of taking a break from things, living in accordance with the seasons, getting outside, getting sunlight, grounding yourself, all these like ancestral health practices.
Yeah. Well, it kind of goes back to the basic principle that the only constant or the only certainty in life is change, because nature and life, reality in general, is a cyclical process. It's a pulse process that's constantly in shift. There's a rhythm to it. Like your heart beats in a rhythm. Things happen in a rhythm. Life occurs in a pulsed rhythm. Anything that you end up doing, very well as far as a practice, people that get into flow states doing anything, usually they find some way to kind of fall into a rhythm with it, right? Puts the body and mind into a state that it can sort of, you know, reach a higher level, a more integrated level of conscious awareness and things. But there's obviously times, you know, of purging, you know, within the natural environment. And then there's times of rebirth, regrowth, you know, rebuilding, spring, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And that sort of microcosm, macrocosm principle applies too, right? To like the human body as being sort of like as above, so below, sort of a smaller version of the whole planet, which is a living organism, you know, and so, you know, the human body obviously has its own cycles too. I mean, everybody of course is aware of like women's cycles and things, but you know, men and women both go through different circadian cycles on a daily basis, of course, and even longer term, you know, cycles of different chapters in their life that kind of correspond to the rhythms of the planet. And whenever we start to become disconnected from those, it brings us out of that synchronistic sort of, you know, synergy that really like manifests a level of health. Cause like for just one quick example is like aging and maintaining health is really the process of gaining and losing cells, like getting out bad cells and like bringing in new good cells. Right. So there's a time to send the body certain signals to like get rid of old cells and to get rid of waste, right? Out with the bad. And there's a time to rebuild. So there's a time to cleanse, time to rebuild. And those take different strategies to do so, right? Like you could eat certain things that stimulate your body to grow and build. If you do that indefinitely, then you end up with, say, bad cells that grow too much. You call it cancer. So yeah, so just that's an interesting little just your core philosophy that ties into some of what we'll be talking about too with Kava as well.
Yeah. So now let's transition to the topic of today's show, and that is Kava. If you were to give a 5-year-old a pitch of why Kava is so cool and important, what would the 60-second TLDR be?
Well, I would say, you know, first of all, Kava is a plant-based elixir, a plant-based drink, natural drink, almost kind of like coffee is a plant-based drink. But it's prepared from the roots of a specific shrub-like plant that grows in South Pacific islands like Fiji and Tonga and Vanuatu. And its main effects, unlike coffee, you kind of think of it as a little bit the opposite, but also, you know, brings over a little bit of the effects of coffee. It's known primarily as a stress relieving, cognitive enhancing beverage that's also sort of social enhancing, right? So those may seem like the antithesis of each other, but really it elicits a state of sort of calm, natural and naturally induced focus and an elation of your mood. So it's kind of like a calm, enhanced state of natural sobriety. So kind of almost feels like what you would want to get off of alcohol, but without the drunkenness, right? But then also some of the effects of coffee where it keeps you activated. So it's like calm, relaxed, engaged focus, which is really kind of like an alpha state where most of us like to be anyways. So stress relieving drink, totally natural, non-addictive. That's basically what Kava is.
That's actually exactly why I first started using Kava, was because I stopped drinking and I wanted some of the same euphoric, mood boosting, unwinding, socially lubricating effects, but I didn't want to destroy my body with ethanol and acetaldehyde and the other toxins that come whenever you drink alcohol.
That's one of the primary reasons people gravitate to Kava. The South Pacific Islanders have been using Kava much longer than alcohol has even existed in those islands. They've been using it for 3,000 years, like in Fiji and in Vanuatu, which is a country that's right next to Fiji in the South Pacific. And to them, alcohol was an alternative, and they never really fully embraced alcohol, only for like tourists, and it got integrated into the country, but they certainly prefer kava use over alcohol. In Vanuatu, for example, they have what are called kava bars, which is kind of like a similar atmosphere to a bar, except for usually much more positive because the state of mind that kava puts you in is very empathetic, very open, very clear-headed, not like, you know, drunkenness and some of the negativity that can come from alcohol, but they prefer the state of mind and they prefer the lack of side effects. Yeah. Because kava is like a medicine for the mind. It helps to build mental and psychological health and move people away from dependency and addiction, which is sort of like the opposite of kind of what alcohol is. So it's interesting because it's kind of the same of alcohol, but it also is very much the opposite, right? It's like all the good parts of alcohol for the most part, without the bad plus more good. So it's definitely that kind of thing. In Vanuatu, they have 20 times as many kava bars as they have regular bars. Wow. Because they prefer the experience. Mm. So
when I first found kava, it was kava created by some big supplement company. I took a capsule or two or three and didn't feel much. I Googled it and learned that there may or may not be toxicity associated with it. So what's the difference between kava and kava?
That's incredibly important. And, you know, most people who have actually heard of kava or think that they've heard of kava know it as a compound that you just mentioned called kava, which is actually by definition not kava. So most people have actually not heard of what we're talking about, kava, which is the food grade full spectrum plant elixir. It's a mixture that's prepared in a specific way. So it's the water and pressure extracted elixir, full plant elixir, that's prepared from the roots of this plant, Piper methysticum, right? Which is the, you know, genus and species name for this plant, the kava plant. So that's the definition of kava. Just like coffee is the water and pressure extracted, you know, drink from the beans of Coffea arabica, right? From that specific plant. So a caffeine pill is not coffee, right? So, you know, it's a similar thing. So these kava products that are out there that go under that name are extracts from this plant, which a lot of times they don't even, you know, go under the same, the same stipulations and criteria. They don't even extract from the right parts of the plant, which hence, you know, some of the dangers, because there are some toxic molecules, some alkaloids that develop in the aerial parts of the plant, the leaves and the stems. They're basically plant defense alkaloids that are natural defense mechanism that the plant produces to defend itself against pests eating it, right? Yeah. But the underground portions don't need to produce those because the animals can't get to them. Therefore, they have the medicine. They don't have the defense compounds. Therefore, they're very edible by humans and they're highly medicinal. So that's one place at which these kava extracts go wrong. But a lot of the kava extracts still are 100% root material, but they're still extracted in a totally different way, using usually organic solvents of some kind, anything from ethanol, alcohol, which is probably the least harmful, but still problematic, all the way to like acetone or like hexane or some of these really aggressive chemical solvents that can, you know, end up in the final product and be toxic in and of themselves. But the biggest problem with, you know, whenever you use solvents to extract, whenever you're extracting with water, you basically end up with the exact ratios, because water is part of the plant structure in and of itself. It's what the plant naturally resonates in. It's not a, you know, synthetic or, foreign substance that binds to certain things and sort of, you know, separates, you know, certain parts of that living system from other parts of that living system, which that's what a plant is. It's a living system that in its entirety sort of is cross-compatible with our bodies as a living system, because it comes from the same ecology. That's why plant medicines are plant medicines. So these kava extracts are, you know, primarily extracted with the use of these solvents, which are foreign substances like bringing in alcohol or these chemicals that are used because they heavily pull active constituents out of substances. That's what an extraction is. Problem is, because you're not using something that's natural to the plant, it binds and pulls certain substances out and leaves others. So it creates this sort of, it creates what we call an isolate, right? So it isolates a few of the constituents. So when you do that, you change a living substance that's really compatible with the human body and very effective into something that's like incomplete. It's kind of like if you were to take a musical orchestra, right? With all these instruments that all work in harmony and, you know, in, you know, sort of synergy that create this overall beautiful sound. And you separate a couple instruments out that play the loudest. You're going to get an experience, but it's not going to be as deep of an experience. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be as good of an experience in the sense, well, with kava, it actually can be dangerous in some cases. But that's basically this, you know, that's a good analogy, because when you use these foreign substances to extract, like alcohol or these other things, you bind to certain of the most active constituents called kava lactones, which people in science, you know, in the scientific community have misinterpreted as the only valuable constituents of kava. That's all people look for. It's kind of like a Western mentality that pharmaceutical companies have adopted, where they're just looking for the one thing, and that's a flawed. That's how you create pharmaceutical drugs to begin with, right? Mm-hmm. Which we know create side effects for that very reason, because they lose that compatibility with the human body. Therefore, they drive the body out of balance in many ways and are less effective and not, in, you know, usually create habituation and addiction, because the body responds in all kinds of pathological ways. So basically, the kava extracts are crude extractions that are done with these foreign substances, not water and pressure. So you end up with like the caffeine pill equivalent instead of, you know, the coffee equivalent, right? So one is food grade, one is completely safe, one is, you know, or, you know, very, very safe, you know, and, you know, very effective and has this depth of experience. And then one just has kind of a shade of the experience. The caffeine pill isn't even a great analogy, because caffeine still is very effective by itself, as where whenever you extract kava this way and just get the lactones out, it takes out most of the effects. So the effects, like I mentioned earlier, are like increased mood, relaxation, and mental clarity. Those are kind of the three main things that you look for. Whenever you extract kava that way, you're left with something that's just a mild relaxant, a mild sedative, loses all the euphoric effects, loses all the cognitive activating, all that social lubrication that you get from sort of the euphoric effects, the great just comforting effects of kava, and it loses all of its nootropic effects too. So you just end up with this thing that like kind of looks and feels like chamomile tea in its kava form, right? It's not much different. It's kind of the same thing. So what a lot of people think of kava, they think of it as like a sleep aid, but really kava leads to a good sleep. And there are strains that are really good sleep aids, even in its traditional form. But mostly these balanced strains are like something that you socialize with and relax, and it leads to a good sleep, but it's not like going to knock you out immediately in most cases. And it's very good for the mind. It's actually has effects on the psyche and on, you know, the physical brain, similar to psychedelic substances, but without the heavy altered state, meaning like you maintain your sobriety. So it's almost kind of like microdosing psychedelics in high dosages. You get this increased communication between left and right brain, which leads to what we call systems thinking and integrated creativity, where people can kind of like get in this really reflective state of mind where they can see the bigger picture of their life circumstances. They can kind of zoom out and their mind is just more integrated. They're more thoughtful in that way. So that's kind of a little side note about traditional kava, but you lose all of that whenever you extract it in this crude way, right? So you end up with just this mild chamomile tea thing that does little, but just kind of knock you out, versus this amazing medicine that's like medicinal to the psyche, that induces empathy, that increases human connection, that is also a nootropic, increases cognitive function, and is relaxing at the same time. So they're very different substances. And the traditional kava form, we got into this because it wasn't present in the marketplace. And the only thing that was present was what people thought was kava, which was this other form. So our whole True Kava, our company, is not just a company that produces products, but it's an educational and advocacy campaign for integrating traditional kava as a large scale commodity into the modern marketplace.
I know when I had my kava pills, I threw them away, and then I was living in New York City, and my friends tried to drag me out to a kava bar. And I was like, no, I've already tried this. And I reluctantly joined and I had a sip, and 10 seconds later, my mouth went numb. And I've heard that mouth going numb is a indicative sign that it's actual kava. And a few minutes later, I actually felt it, like a profound change in the way I felt. And from then on, I realized that there's a big difference between the quality of the two.
Yeah. Totally different substance at that point, yeah.
So what are the active ingredients in kava? I know you said that the kava lactones are the primary, but are there other alkaloids and things to look for?
There are, but a lot we know are there and haven't been fully isolated and basically named, but we know that there's a wide array of supportive compounds in the traditional sort of mixture in that, you know, that you basically get rubbed out of the mixture whenever you extract with solvents. And there's more kava lactones as well that are in there. So there's 18 total known kava lactones, six of which are the primary kava lactones, they're the instruments that play the loudest from that orchestra metaphor, but there's also supportive alkaloids, you know, flavonoids and other constituents that help to activate and increase the bioavailability of them and create that sort of synergistic harmony. And also increase the half-life and allow them to actually penetrate into the cell, you know, and into the brain and, you know, affect the receptors in all these different ways, as where whenever you isolate them without the supportive constituents to activate them, they are kind of benign, which is why you lose the effects. So there's a lot of various flavonoids, but there's the six major kava lactones that are present in traditional kava, some of which are present, and a lot of times, sometimes all of them are present, but it's really about the ratios, about the supportives out there too. But there's kavane, which is kind of like the one that's reported on most in the literature. There's a double bonded form of it called dihydrokavane. Mm-hmm. There's a compound called methysticin, a compound called dihydromethysticin, which is a double bonded form of that. Yeah. And then there's one called yangonin, and then one called desmethoxyyangonin. And so those are the six major instruments that play loudest. And, you know, they all play different roles. Like, for example, the ratios of the lactones, you know, determine the effects, right? So there's like 200 different actively known strains of kava that are used consistently in the islands. So just kind of like cannabis, there's like these strains that have different ratios of lactones and constituents, just like the different strains of cannabis with different ratios of cannabinoids and things. And some kava strains are more nootropic and less relaxing, and some like are super relaxing, more body, like heady versus heavy kind of thing, right? Yeah. But all kava doesn't really take you out of your sobriety. It can be super strong, but you always like maintain your faculties, which differentiates it from cannabis and especially from alcohol. Mm-hmm. But so like, you know, for example, the higher cerebral kavas, the higher mood lifting kavas, usually are high in a kava lactone called yangonin, which was one that I named just now. Yeah. And it's because it has an affinity for the dopamine system acting as a monoamine oxidase inhibitor, monoamine oxidase B inhibitor, which it does it in a way that's, you know, reversible and modulatory, that doesn't deplete it. So it doesn't cause addiction. Very unique, right? Because things that affect dopamine powerfully usually perpetuate addiction, but kava does not. That's unique, but yeah, so that's a little bit on the pharmacology there.
Cool. Yeah. Let's talk more about the different pathways in the body kava impacts, because I've talked to a couple people and they mentioned that it impacts the endocannabinoid system, and then others say it impacts the opioid system. And I'm not sure if that second one is true or not.
Yeah. So there's slim evidence for both of those. There's definitely, you know, a couple studies that have shown a small affinity for the endocannabinoid system. We don't know how significant it is, because for those people that aren't unfamiliar with the endocannabinoid system, it's kind of like we've found out it's a whole system that we, you know, discovered in recent years that obviously most well known for the compounds in cannabis binding to, but, you know, are naturally produced, like, you know, cannabinoids like anandamide, for example. Are part of our body's natural sort of regulatory system that helps to regulate the regulators, right? So the regulators are like the neurotransmitters, dopamine, serotonin, GABA, acetylcholine, histamine, glutamate. And the endocannabinoid system is like this oversight regulatory system that's a complex part of the nervous system, which is really, you know, interesting, which is why cannabis can do so many things, because it affects that system. It kind of, you know, affects it at its base. So kava definitely does. We've got a little bit of evidence that it definitely does affect the endocannabinoid system, but its most potent effects go more direct than that to the pure regulators, which gives it a more of a visceral effect than, say, CBD does. You know, it's so it's its primary pathway that's probably has the highest affinity from kava to, you know, the nervous system, that's become most publicized, most well-known, most famous, is the kava lactone's affinity for this specific subset of GABA receptors, the GABA-A receptors. So GABA is the primary neurotransmitter system in the body that basically elicits inhibition of the nervous system. So slowing of the nervous system, the brakes of the nervous system is basically what it is. So anytime a relaxing process sets in, the production and utilization of GABA is involved. Anything that you take that's relaxing usually has a direct or indirect effect on the GABA system, right? Whether it be alcohol or benzodiazepines like Xanax, those hit the GABA receptors with the sledgehammer. It gives this really nice relaxing effect that just takes the anxiety away, and you just feel free to basically have conversation easier, which is one way that alcohol works, because your inhibitions, your stress around having conversation is sort of lifted, right? But it also, you have a lot of the GABA system activated, and then it goes into sleep, you know, because it relaxes you so much, shifts you into sleep, paralleling the serotonin system, melatonin, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So the GABA system is the most, you know, sort of well publicized of the systems, and it affects it in a really unique way. Usually compounds that affect the GABA system, just like dopamine, are very addictive, because by hitting that system, it creates this incredible anxiety relief. But if whenever you hit that system with almost any other synthetic compound or drug-like compound, and alcohol included in that, alcohol and synthetic drugs work in a way that's sort of foreign and artificial to the body. Meaning that it's not like you're taking a living organism, like I explained, into the body, like explained earlier, where the body recognizes it and it integrates it. That living system sort of parallels with yours. You know, there's a cross compatibility there to the complexity of those things with medicines that are, you know, consumable by humans. With alcohol and like synthetic drugs, especially, they come in and they're usually just like a very simple substance that just hits certain receptors and basically just kind of tricks them into just dumping their built up chemistry, right? Yeah. So what you end up doing is, instead of like an organism coming in and just sort of communicating with the body at multiple different steps of its assembly line, like chemistry process, it goes in and just kind of hits a button downstream. You know, I like the assembly line metaphor, because the system is in the body. It's like a sequence, right? And it's like an assembly line. And a plant medicine takes its own assembly line and communicates to every step and keeps every step on the same page so that it kind of like gets to push it in the right direction without bringing it out of balance. A synthetic drug is like one single molecule instead of all this complexity that just goes in and just hacks one step in the assembly line and then throws off the rest of the steps because none of the other steps know what the hell's going on. And that's, the body goes, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like we've got, like, what's going on here? Like, for example, benzodiazepine comes in, like Xanax, anti-anxiety drug, comes in, binds to this GABA-A receptor, dumps the hell out of it. And basically, you know, you get this huge relaxing effect, but the body goes, whoa, this is a foreign molecule that's coming in. We don't know what's going on. So then it tries to respond by suppressing the production utilization of that over time. So that's called downregulation. But it also has just a direct depletatory effect, because you're not telling the other systems how to replete and keep up with like replenishing what you've lost. So it ends up being like this process of borrowing from tomorrow to pay for today with drugs, right? So it's kind of like charging credit, right? You're not really like putting more money in the bank. You're just spending what you have, which is why the need for the next cigarette or benzo or whatever is really perpetuated by the last one. Cause like, you know, you play that game, you dump, you spend cash, and then tomorrow you need twice as much cash because now you're even more short. You're in debt with your body's chemistry. And then you take away the credit card or the substance, and then now you've gotten no cash and you're in withdrawal, right? You have no brain chemicals to even feel normal. So kava works in this very unique and different way, right? Like I said, it's like this that works in like the full assembly line, full intelligence kind of thing. Where it has these checks and balances. So it hits the GABA-A receptors, but actually instead of downregulating them, it upregulates them with regular use, which is like really cool. And it's something that's been well documented in the ethnobotanical literature, anthropological accounts. There's this well-known phenomenon around kava that's called reverse tolerance. And so what does that mean? Okay, well, you get a tolerance because I said, like, if you're charging on credit with your chemistry borrowing from tomorrow to pay for today, you end up spending your available stores and you need more of the same substance to get the same effect. In other words, you have to charge quite twice as hard because there's not as much chemistry to dump. You're depleting it. Kava is actually helping to like signal the receptors to upregulate and to replenish its production of the GABA. So tomorrow you don't need as much kava. You need less kava to stimulate the same effect because now you have more of the available substance. But it gives you this really acutely therapeutic effect, just like alcohol, but it's helping to restore and replenish it at the same time. So this is of huge significance because it makes it an amazing substance for coming off these other substances that have depleted your bank account. It goes in, satisfies the cravings, stops the withdrawal symptoms or you know, reduces them by upregulating the receptors immediately, but then also helping as you use it over time to replenish and helping to restore that. That which is how I came across it. I was heavily addicted to benzodiazepines for seizures and whenever I was in an autoimmune condition. And I got off benzos in a very short amount of time, and benzodiazepines are like incredibly difficult to get off. So I say all that just to basically illustrate the significance around its affinity for this GABA pathway, but the fact that it hits it in a very different way than the other things, right? So there's a couple other secondary pathways outside of just the GABA system. The GABA is like sort of like the most valuable.
Yeah, before you go on, does it also work on GABA B? Because GABA A, as you mentioned, is hit by alcohol and Xanax and a lot of like the benzos. Mm-hmm. And GABA B doesn't have the same like effects on your coordination and other problems like that associated with like alcohol and Xanax use. Does it work on GABA B as well?
So there's a little bit of evidence to suggest that it does in a more minor way, but you know, the correlation between, you know, faculty, you know, control, you know, motor impairment and GABA A receptors is actually a little bit of a misinterpretation by most, meaning that it's not necessarily that just the GABA A receptors in and of themselves elicit an impairment, because your body is naturally using that system all the time whenever it's naturally relaxing, right? It's the way that it's hit, right? So whenever it's hit by an artificial substance, it's not regulated by the intelligence of the body. So it just dumps way too much, leading to a sort of like, because, you know, GABA is inhibitory, so it can kind of repel or it can kind of suppress some of the other neurotransmitters that are really crucial in just like your normal cognition, right? So it can kind of put you out of it if it's hit too much, too hard, too fast. But if it's regulated through a plant medicine that has kind of that full system intelligence, then it tends to modulate just like an adaptogen, right? So it hits it pretty powerfully. And there are really high doses of kava that can start to get you a little bit in that mode, but nothing, it's very minor, even in high dosages. So it's a little bit of how it's affected, and it does affect the GABA B, a little bit as well too. The GABA B just has more of a resistance to that effect because of the way that it's wired into the system. People who are familiar with compounds like phenylbutyric acid, phenibut, which is like a synthetic compound that some people take, still is addictive still, but it's like less, you know, noxious than benzos, right? And less impairment.
Yeah, you want to have a lot of caution with that because it might be less addictive, but I've still read many horror stories. And if you do 100%. Decide to take it, just a tiny dose can really do wonders. You don't need to have a huge dose of it.
Yeah, but it doesn't affect, in the short term, it doesn't affect cognitive impairment in the same way as benzos, which is why the Russians developed it. They developed it for astronauts. You know, they didn't want to be like, you know, out of it while they were, you know.
Yep. Okay, you mentioned GABA. What else?
Okay, so GABA is like a prominent pathway that everyone knows about, like I mentioned. The secondary pathways that are probably most famous, I think it's important to note to kind of understand why kava hits these pathways a little bit, you know, just so that you'll understand how they're all threaded together. Because plant medicines, usually they don't like, you know, nothing happens by accident. Usually they have a characteristic. They have a role in the environment, right? And, you know, they've developed through evolutionary circumstances to develop a certain role, and they have a certain sort of fingerprint to the, an energetic, you know, purpose in the environment. And so they develop certain biochemical characteristics. And then whenever human beings consume them, those characteristics are transferred to from one organism to the other, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So the sort of characteristic of kava in the environment is that it's a protective substance. Kava plays a really protective role in the natural ecology where it grows. It helps to protect other things from pests and also has to adapt to very harsh circumstances of it being cut and eaten and different things like that. So it has developed a full spectrum of biochemically mediated sort of stress adaptive effects, right? That happen to expand across virtually every mechanism of stress reduction, stress modulation, and protection that we know of in biology, right? Which is great because that extends to humans as well. It's in the plant, but then extends to higher vertebrates. We take it in our body, and it has this kind of complete subset of protective mechanisms, right? Because biology is complete. Again, we're not working with the isolates. We're working with the complete system.
Yep.
So one system to another. So that's why it has so many mechanisms is because, you know, nothing in our bodies is just one single mechanism. It's that symphony. It's a bunch of mechanisms overlapping and it's a complex system. So kava has not only the GABA system, which is sort of at the center of this protection because it reduces cortisol levels, reduces glutamate levels in the brain, which is like can excite the brain and inflame it and stuff. That's a protective thing, right? So the GABA system is like putting the brakes on the fire in the nervous system and in the immune system, right? But parallel to that, it hits on almost every neuro and tissue protective pathway that we know of. It's sort of parallel to GABA system. So one of the other primary ones, it's a calcium and sodium channel blocker. That's the same mechanism that a lot of anti-seizure and neuroprotective drugs work on, right? So, but it does that again in a really modulatory way that's non-addictive and everything. So it does that. It's also a COX-2 inhibitor. It's a COX inhibitor, which is similar to non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, but not harsh to the gut and the kidneys like those drugs are. So it's an anti-inflammatory, which is also protective. It's a NRF2 activator. So through this hormetic stress pathway, it increases the body's availability and production of its protective antioxidants against free radicals like glutathione, peroxidase, catalase, and superoxide dismutase. Well, yeah. It works in the antioxidant system. It's a neuro and tissue protective. So, you know, those are some of the main like sort of neuro and tissue protective pathways, but it also has protective effects on human metabolism. So what I mean by that is that there are protective mechanisms in biology and in our bodies that, like we were talking about the cycles earlier, right? That in survival states, whenever the body is faced with a stress, like say like lack of food, the body will go into this state in which it recycles its own stored energy in the form of fat and bad tissues, and it burns up those tissues internally. It eats from itself in order to survive. That's a protective adaptive mechanism. So kava actually has that too. Yongonin, which was one of the kava lactones that I mentioned earlier, has a mechanism through which it activates a pathway called AMPK, which is basically that switch in the body that puts us in a self-recycling mode, which is what we're trying to get into in a fasted state. It basically is like tells the body, hey, there's no outside energy coming in, so we want to burn fat for fuel. And more importantly, we want to burn bad tissues out and recycle them into energy. So the body, whenever it's not eating, it takes that opportunity to kind of like recycle the garbage, the bad cells, into usable energy to survive, which it doesn't have to do whenever you're putting in exogenous food. So like kava has this protective mechanism too. It hits this system, which activates fat burning, which is great for weight loss, which is great for trying to get into, you know, ketotic states, like trying to get into ketosis, which increases ketones, which also helped, you know, mental clarity, suppresses appetite. So it's a great sort of appetite suppressant, which helps to build metabolic flexibility over time, which is basically like it helps to over time to feed into a healing process to restore our body's ability to like modulate its energy production through food and its hormones and things, right? So again, that's a lot, but basically a lot of the benefits of fasting you can induce with taking kava as well. And if you're trying to fast or get into say ketosis, kava helps you to get in easier, right? It's like it takes away food cravings and things, right? So that's a really interesting thing too, as well. And the last benefit that's wired into this as well is its effects on the other brain systems like dopamine, serotonin, and acetylcholine. Mainly on dopamine, lesser on serotonin and acetylcholine, but The dopaminergic effect is what I referred to earlier, is responsible for most of the euphoria and the sort of like the uplifting effect that you get while you're getting the relaxation, right? From the GABA system. So the dopamine effect is, dopamine is responsible for energy, focus, motivation, concentration. It's what psychostimulants like Adderall and things are inducing in a really artificial, harmful way, very addictive. But you want to elevate dopamine levels in a natural way, right? And that's another thing too, that helps on the sort of fasting side of things, is like, you're able to actually like increase dopamine in the brain without putting glucose or sugar in the brain, which decreases cravings for almost anything that's addictive, right? Including food. So it kind of satiates the brain and turns it on without putting a bunch of sugar in there. So it sort of puts you in this metabolically flexible, high ketone sort of healing state in the brain, high ketones, low inflammatory compounds, low free radicals. So it helps with neurological recovery, or to protect the brain from injury, it helps post brain injuries, right? So not only is it stress reducing, but it really helps in restoring the physical brain and the mind because of some of the psychological effects I was talking about earlier as well too. Very, very interesting.
Wow, there's a lot there. And it sounds like what's really cool about it is that it does all this in a non-depleting manner.
Correct. Yeah. Well, that's magic, right? Because if it did all of these things and it was highly addictive, that would almost make it nil, right? Because it's like, there's a lot of, you can have a lot of fun, smoking meth, but rational people don't do it because yeah. It ain't worth it. Right. It's like that, but it all is due to the intelligence of plant pharmacology and how these living organisms interface with the body. And it goes back to this principle that's like, I call nature reintegration, which is like probably one of the primary principles to understand if you're just trying to live a better life and to be healthier mentally, psychologically, physically. Most disease that we see today, chronic disease, I don't mean like acute things, emergencies that can happen, getting hit by a car or something like that. Or getting shot or something, I mean like the chronic diseases that like we're slowly deteriorating very unnaturally. Like most of the suffering that's on the planet right now is from these chronic diseases. And what you see is that most of them are from a syndrome that we call nature divorcement syndrome. It means basically as we, deviate more from, living in nature, in the natural ecology, which is our home because we're part of the natural ecology. We start to sort of put ourselves in these artificial environments away from the elements, away from sun, away from the natural environment, away from the energies there, away from natural foods. And we start to eat these processed foods, just like the processed kava I was telling you about earlier. We start to, deviate ourselves from the system that maintains health. And so the farther that we get away from nature, the more we see manifestations of all disease, even psychologically and emotionally. And that's a whole nother conversation, but that's basically like why embrace these plant medicines is so important, because it's another one of the many examples of how, reintegrating ourselves with compounds, strategies, circumstances, mentalities, everything that's close to the intelligence of nature and not, superseded by a lower intelligence of individual life forms like men, getting back to that is just going to get us back to the origin of where our health comes from. So, indigenous cultures, like people in the South Pacific, don't have nearly as many ailments as we do because they're still close to these principles, close to these medicines. And it makes sense why these medicines interface so well with the human body and help to restore health instead of detract from it. They're sort of like the counter opposite. So kava is really not a drug, even though a lot of people would use it in place of a drug. It's really an anti-drug, which just makes it magical, amazing.
Yeah, I want to circle back to these natural compounds that you're also a fan of in the rapid fire round later. But for now, what I'm hearing you say is that kava has the cognitive benefits, it has spiritual benefits, creativity, introspection, even emotional processing via nervous system downregulation, mood enhancement. Does it have physical recovery benefits?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Because I mean, if you think about it, so it feeds into this entire system of like, you know, because of its effects on upregulation of GABA, what it's doing over time, what we see in the studies and what we've observed anthropologically, is it appears to be helping supporting the body in it recovering from sympathetic dominance. So it seems to be balancing out the sympathetic and the parasympathetic, rehabilitating the parasympathetic. And remember, you know, the sympathetic is like the mode, the switch in the body that's like fight or flight. That's like the thing that most of us are stuck in today, which it's also a degenerative state because it's not a restorative state. It's basically fight or flight is there's a threat. Our body perceives that there's a threat of some kind. It bolsters out every stress hormone and reverts all of the energy basically in the body just to either fighting or running away. So it's not worried about surviving long-term. It's worried about just using all of its energy to fight that threat or get the heck out of here. So the problem is it's meant to go into that just to fight the threat or get out. And then it's meant to shift back into parasympathetic, which is rest and digest. Mm-hmm. So that's where you recover. That's also where you absorb nutrients. It's where you nutrify yourself and then sleep and recover, right? So whenever people are sympathetic dominant because they're constantly being prodded with a million different forms of stimulation in a fast-paced rat race of modern culture, whether it be drug-induced, whether it be just emotional stress-induced, driving on the interstate, you know, road rage, the whole thing, emotional stuff, people just are constantly hitting this button is unnaturally telling the body that it's under threat. And what it does is it trains up the sympathetic nervous system and holds you in that state all the time, which is very unnatural. If you were a natural, hunter-gatherer human, you would actually 200,000 years ago, you would actually be spending most of your time relaxing and then some of your time like hunting. And that's a natural state for a human. So most people, long story short, are in sympathetic dominance, which is why mental illness, stress, trauma, it's not a surprise, is everywhere. Yeah. You can't throw a stick without hitting someone who's severely traumatized and, is on 30 different drugs today. Not 30, but you know what I mean? some people. The parasympathetic, because kava feeds into that, it absolutely feeds into the body's ability. It recovers the body's ability to recover on its own, right? Or it helps to support that pretty substantially as a medicine. So it sends that signal, parasympathetic, up. So that means deeper sleep. We see in our doctor's population increase in deep and REM sleep cycles. You recover better during sleep. You recover better mentally. It helps to restore the brain chemistry. So yes, physiologic recovery across the board, it's very good for.
You also mentioned that it improves the COX-2 and NRF2 pathways. So that alone will help speed up recovery.
Yeah, because it'll put out the fire on the inflammation. Yeah. You know, nothing like a system, you can't rebuild a house when it's on fire, right? You know what I mean? And so that's what recovery is. It's constantly rebuilding a house that's being damaged by the process of life. And it's like, when you're constantly inflamed, the recovery process barely begins, if anything, if at all. So the fact it puts out the fire, reduces the stress hormones, gets you deeper sleep, it's hitting on all those protective pathways, goes back to the protective thing,
And at the same time, it's also having longevity benefits by increasing autophagy and other repair processes.
Mm-hmm. When you think kava, think protection and restoration, right? That's its MO.
Simple enough. So how do I go about deciding how much to take? Because I know there's different effects depending on how much you take, and you guys sell several different sizes and different products. So is it like alcohol where I have one drink and I'll feel a certain way, I'll have a second drink and I'll feel a little stronger effects, and that just continues up to a point where I pass and I feel terrible?
Very much so, except without really the feeling terrible. If you're getting good kava, there are kind of crappy preparations of even traditional kava that like have a lot of the plant sediment in them, and just consuming so much of it can give you stomach upset, because there's just like a lot of plant sediment that just like, can just hit your gut really hard. Our products are highly refined in the sense that they're filtered in a way that keeps the goodies in and the bad stuff out, or the irritating stuff out. So you can consume pretty high dosages of our drink product, which actually is not released yet. It will be released next month. But that's the one that you tried at the show. it's a carbonated drink product that's like having a beer, except for all the effects that we're talking about. And then we've got a shot, which is the same as the drink. It's just like a 5-hour energy shot, just in 2 ounces instead of 12. Same amount of kava per serving. And then we have an oil, which is sort of like an entry level product that's more subtle, but it's widely versatile. Like it, because of the way that and the intensity that it's at, it only builds up to a certain point and then kind of levels out, has the general effects of traditional kava, but it's versatile. You can take any time of the day without it being overwhelming at all for all ages, including kids. So that's, the oil is sort of like the daily therapeutic supplement. You can put it in your coffee. Coffee helps to potentiate it. Caffeine does. MCT does as well. Intensifies the cellular autophagy and all that stuff too as well. This goes very well with that. So as far as dosing, if you're talking about the oil, you always start with droppers full. So anywhere from 1 to 4 droppers full usually, right? Some people clinically trying to get off drugs and things will go up to 8 max. And it's food grade. Because it's in its food form, you can't overdose on it. It gets up to a certain point that kind of the body sort of modulates it out. But you don't want to waste your money by taking too much. So anywhere from, usually people that are trying to get a good therapeutic effect, I say, 2 droppers full is where you start to build up the effects. The effects will build because the reverse tolerance, it's building instead of depleting. So I always tell people to give kava 30 days before you know how it's fully going to affect you, because the effects get more prominent. I tell people to do that. So with the oil, that's make that determination there. With the drinks, you can drink up to your comfort level. One serving is really just a mild, relaxing thing. We want it to be that way, so that just, you can get that mild effect if you want. And you can drink, several, and it'll just kind of get more intense up to a point where it kind of levels out.
I see.
But it can get very recreational, very relaxing, very euphoric, but doesn't impair your faculties at any reasonable dose. If you pounded usually way more than people's stomach can hold, right? If you pounded 15 to 20 or something, which is like some people do with beer, right? So some people could, but.
I ask because I've had one many times and I've had 2 a handful of times, but I've never gone beyond 2, but now I'm curious.
Yeah. This is still the retail version of the product. So it's a little bit more for retail. We're producing some stuff for the medical space and for more of the alternative recreational space, like alternative bar stuff. That's going to be way more concentrated and strong, but you can get to those high places much faster. Kava can get very intense at high dosages. So its effects change. These are still all these of the base doses we're talking about are still kind of like kava microdoses a little bit. Mm-hmm. All the great effects that we're talking about, but in really high dosages, kava can get very entheogenic, but still not like a trip, like not altered state, but very euphoric. It can get a very recreational thing, but yet very smooth still. So it's really, really interesting stuff.
Are there typical side effects that people feel? Like I know when I had it, the main thing I felt was a numb mouth.
That's really common, especially in the beginning. Usually that goes away whenever you drink it regularly. But it's basically how the kava lactate, that tells you you've got kava lactones in there. They interact with the nerves, and it only happens for about a minute or two. And then the feeling comes back. It's just a minor little sort of numbing. It's just, a lot of people really like that effect because it lets you know that you've got real kava.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if that's all, Cameron, we could talk about this for hours. We've already gone for an hour. I want to start to slowly wrap this thing up. But before we do, I have a handful of other questions for you. You mentioned stacking it with other things in passing a minute ago, such as coffee or MCT oil, or possibly even some of the other things that work on GABA, like theanine or taurine, magnesium, these kinds of things. Are you doing that with the typical kava product you have, or is this with your Kava Mind product?
Both. The Kava Mind product is a different strain that happens to be, like I was talking about, the different strains, happens to be more on the dopaminergic side of things, just a little bit more of that. It's a strain from Tonga, and Tonga has bred their strains more for the euphoric effects. More for the mind enhancing ones. So any of those can be, because all kava has a GABAergic effect. Some just express more of the dopaminergic, some of the, it's just different ratios, varying intensities. So all of those, all kava is synergistic because all kava is anxiolytic. But some kava is so anxiolytic that it's borderlines on sedative. Some strains are. None of the strains that we currently carry, because we've tried to keep it in that sort of alcohol alternative, really nice any time of the day type of experience, which is what people like the most, leads to a good sleep no matter what, but doesn't necessarily knock you out, you know, like some strains would. But basically anything that hits GABA is going to be synergistic and kind of intensify the effect. The compounds that you named, you know, taurine, theanine, magnesium, GABA, and then, you know, the plant compounds, the more subtle ones, valerian root, passion flower, lemon balm, chamomile, skullcap, all of those bind to GABA receptors in a subtle way. So they kind of act as potentiators with kava as well too. Kava is sort of the powerhouse, and those things you can sort of add. If you want to get a little bit more of a therapeutic effect, you can add some of those in. But honestly, kava is plenty therapeutic just by itself. So a lot of times it's not really necessary for most people. Those things are very mild compared to kava in most cases. So, you know, a couple stronger ones that are a little bit stronger than those ones I just named, there's magnolia bark is pretty darn strong, you know, compared to those. It potentiates more on the sedative side of things. So if you want to use kava as a sleep aid, add some magnolia bark on the side of it. It's got a lot of good therapeutic neuroprotective effects as well. There's also a Chinese herb called Swan Zhao Ren. That's the Chinese name, but we call it Sisyphus jujuba. It's from a fruit. Sisyphus. Yes, it's a really, there's really no easy way to say this herb, but it's one that you can find online, in different places, different Chinese herbs. And it's a really nice GABAergic, great restorative compound too, that's really synergistic with kava. Those are my favorite two to stack with kava, is the magnolia bark and Sisyphus. Those two are just really nice, especially with leading into sleep with kava.
I hope I can find Sisyphus on the internet. Spelling might be a bit difficult there.
Oh, for sure. I'll send you the spelling. You can find it.
Perfect.
There's different, you know, Chinese herb, you know, manufacturers that have it that in quality, like Dragon Herbs or Lost Empire. They carry sort of concentrates of it that you can take.
Well, Cameron, if people are interested in connecting with you or picking up their own true kava, how do they go about that?
Yeah, so you just go to truekava.com, T-R-U, not T-R-U-E, kava.com, and all the information is there. We've got a lot of great information just on kava in general, some of the other interviews, if you want to delve into, you know, some of the other people in the biohacking industry where we've covered different aspects of the conversation. You really want to dive into some deep stuff about kava, where there's plenty of other podcasts and interviews that you can check out. There's plenty of references to all the studies. You can find, you know, a lot of information, articles as well on our blog that we've written that to sort of dive deeper into, say, like the psychedelic-like effects of kava and using it for this effect or that effect. So there's just a huge body of information around kava. It's a very relevant medicine that's, I think, is going to play a big role in the future, in helping to reshape the future social structure of the culture. In the same way that coffee has really shaped the social structure in a big way and productivity structure, and alcohol has shaped the social structure. I think kava is an alternative that's going to make for a much, much more healthy social fabric in the future. So it's going to play a huge role. It's a very interesting topic.
I should have had some true kava before the interview today.
Yeah. Oh, it definitely helps. It's great for interviews. I mean, it just opens you up, helps you to think in that more sort of, you know, systematic way that kind of helps you connect dots and kind of like thread ideas together. We use it in all our brainstorming sessions and things, you know, within the company. Your creativity, it's just great. You get a lot of people on kava. The ideas are just better. People are open, more empathetic. It's just great, makes for great atmosphere.
Nice. And I think we set up a discount for MindBody Peak Performance listeners. Was that the code Urban?
I believe so. I'd have to double check with you on that. It was either Nick or Urban. It was one of the two. I think so. Let's just make it Urban and it'll be like a 10% discount.
Yeah. If you've tried kava previously and it may have been kava or something else, I encourage you to try this kava because I've tried it and can attest that it actually does what he's explained. Now let's go on to the last question before we go on to the rapid fire round. What three teachers have had the biggest impact on your life and work?
So I've got a lot of different ones. There's some from a more of a philosophical sort of base perspective, base reality perspective that had shaped my perspective and helped to shape how I think about reality, life, the environment in general, that has led to a deeper understanding of everything threaded within it. So I would put people in that category, like Alan Watts, for example, people that go bridge, you know, the philosophical into the spiritual, into even the psychological. I would also put Carl Jung in that category as well, too. Famous, you know, self-help experts like Jordan Peterson derive most of their ideas from Jungian principles. Those are two very powerful ones off the top of my head. From a physiological perspective, that's just more directly related to food, the environment, plant medicine. With psychedelics, there's the obvious ones like Terence McKenna, which, you know, he was a huge psychedelic advocate and helped to sort of usher in this sort of interest in the scientific community for psychedelics. But more specifically on food and plants, I would say the work of Weston A. Price and of, you know, Rudolf Steiner, Victor Schauberger, those people really all helped to shape, just reading their work, my viewpoint of not only the natural ecology and food and, you know, nutrition and physical degeneration, which is a Weston A. Price thing, and just helping me to sort of understand like how we derive energy from the natural ecology and transfer it to ourselves, which we call consuming food. You know, so all of those are ones that come to mind.
I'm a huge fan of those, and that's the first time that multiple have been listed, and I've known all of them and have studied virtually all of their works. And I love what you said about a lot of the modern teachers actually gaining wisdom from these previous teachers. So why not go straight to the source and study the original greats?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Now we'll do a quick rapid fire round because we're already over on time. What area of your own health and performance are you currently working on?
There is no ultimate destination because we live in the existence of infinity, right? I don't think anyone could really argue that with a straight face. So even though I've been working on myself for years, long story short, I got into this whole process through losing my physical health. So I've been working on my physical health for years. I'm still kind of on the outskirts of that, even though I'm in a really good place now and I've regenerated mostly and, you know, through all my various practices, both ancient healing strategies through nutrition and environment and modern healing strategies like your injections of things like stem cells and peptides. And it's an integration of both of those things together. So I'm still working on that portion of it. I'm on the outskirts and I'm really out of the disease portion. Now I'm sort of in the optimization portion of that, trying to really make sure that my mind, my body, my energy is optimized, because ultimately energy is your number one currency, both energy and time, right? Yeah. You know, money is just a byproduct. It's just a form of energy, right? That we sort of, you know, disperse amongst ourselves. But really, your energy is so incredibly important. And investing in your physical health is going to give you more energy to put towards all of your passions, right? If you don't have energy, if you're sick, you can't do anything, right? It's like that old saying, you know, a person who has his health has 1,000 dreams. A person who has lost his health has only one, and that's to get it back, right? You know, so it's like, because you, without energy, you can't make anything happen. You know, I do a lot of things from the fasting practices to the nutritional practices to all the supplementation, you know, the ancient stuff into the sort of more, you know, technological side, better living through chemistry, hopefully still governed by natural principles, right? So instead of drugs and pharmacology, I've worked with a lot of things like stem cells in myself, and like I said, peptides. They're all naturally derived. Still use the intelligence of the body. So I'm actively working on myself through those principles, and that's how I've gotten to this point. And I'm also constantly really trying to, just renew my internal psychological, mental paradigm as well too, right? Mm-hmm. You know, trying to find the weaknesses, trying to find the places in which I'm wrong, you know, trying to find my blind spots. So I've done a lot of exploration with, like, say, psychedelic medicines that help to sort of expose some of those weaknesses, help you to zoom out, to kind of see where your ego is getting in the way or this or that, you know. So I'm working on myself mentally and emotionally constantly too, especially in a crazy time we live in. So,
yeah, I don't think I've ever nodded my head as many times in one interview. So I get it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What's been the best life-changing purchase you've made under $500?
That's a good one. Well, most of the things that are most profound have actually been free, believe it or not. Yep. I mean, just getting out into the elements.
Yeah.
And because like at the end of the day, there's a lot of, you know, devices that I could throw at you. I could say like a biomat, for example, has been very beneficial to me. You know, it was like blue blocker glasses or something like that. I mean, I could see like so many different things that people could go and buy. And at the end of the day, I mean, I could even say different types of monitoring devices and things, glucose monitor monitor your blood sugar, because that's going to profoundly change your health. You can get a good idea of what your blood sugar does. So I can say a few things like that, but mostly you got to get the basics down, right? Right. You know, the four pillars of health, that'd be exercise, nutrition, sleep, and mindset. If you're not addressing those things and you think that buying a $400 device is going to transform your life, it's not. Though that'll take it to the next level. But the foundation is important, right? You've got to get out in the elements. You got to realign with nature. You don't have to get any of, if you just get a B in those categories, then you'll have an A in overall health, right?
Yes,
it doesn't have to be perfect. It's like, just try to get your sleep as good as you can. Try to eat reasonably, right? As clean as you can, as natural as you can. You know, move and get some exercise and work on your mindset, get rid of the toxic people, get rid of, the negative pathological people, the narcissists, the sociopaths, start with those and go from there, and that's really the best investment, is just to understand those four pillars and just invest in those. And then there's several devices, that you can get, lots of stuff.
I think that almost all of the best health optimization tools are free. And so you can save that $500 for something else.
Yeah, exactly.
Cameron, what's one thing that your tribe does not know about you?
I try to be open, because I've been through a lot, and I've been very sick, suffered a lot. That's how I got into this. That's what drives me. And so I try to be as much of an open book as humanly possible, because if it can help someone, then I'm willing to share it. I pretty much share everything. I mean, maybe that my actual name isn't Cameron. Maybe that.
Really?
Well, I mean, it is. That's my middle name, but my first name is John. And so like nobody calls me that, and no one knows that. Yeah. So there's that. It's a small thing, but
yeah. That's it. We didn't even touch on your extremely powerful story. I guess we'll save that for another time. But do you have any final remarks you'd like to leave listeners with?
I would just remind people that anytime we talk about a highly niche topic like this, right, that's like one specific thing, I do want to remind people that in no way are we insinuating that one thing does everything. At the end of the day, like I kind of touched on just a second ago, it's really, it's the sum of all subtleties that really transforms people's life, right? It's the synergy between getting the main active ingredients. It's kind of like if you're baking bread, and you just try to focus on just the yeast or just the flour. You try to bake just flour, see what happens. Bake just water, bake just yeast, see what happens. You put them together and you get magic. And they're all small, but whenever you put them together, you get something great. So like multi-therapeutic approaches, doing the right combination of things that are aligned with natural principles for long enough is how you slowly shift your life back into a realm of health. So I would just encourage people to just focus on the basics in anything, and just invest in your own personal growth in every aspect, right? So improving your physical health, your psychological, emotional, because only then will you really be fulfilled and happy. And only then will you actually have something to offer people, because I truly believe that a higher purpose for growing as a person is so that we can give, because you can't give what you don't have. And we know from the social sciences that the two primary ways to achieve fulfillment, not pleasure, but fulfillment and happiness, is growing and giving. A little bit there, so.
Yep. Well, Cameron, way to close with a bang there. Thank you for joining us today on the podcast, and I appreciate all your time and wisdom today.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it so much.
I'm Nick Urban, here with Cameron George, signing out from mindbodypeak.com. Have a great week and be an outlier. Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Head over to Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and leave a rating. Every review helps me bring you thought-provoking guests. As always, you can find the show notes for this one at mindbodypeak.com slash
and then the number of the episode. There, you can also chat with other peak performers or connect with me directly. The information depicted in this podcast is for information purposes only. Please consult your primary healthcare professional before making any lifestyle changes.